Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And, oops, we forgot something very important last week.
Did we forget?
We forgot to say.
I thought we decided we were going to keep it for ourselves.
Aha. This is for anybody contemplating a trip to Galway. And we have to offer a $100 gift certificate for dinner at Anir.
Hate to annoy you, but it's 100 euros.
Oh, okay, that's better.
100 euros, pretty almost enough to buy dinner for two, I think, at the only Michelin one-star restaurant in Western Ireland.
Yeah, so I thought it was dollars. So it's
so
euros.
What you have to do is you have to come up with the very best reason why you should be the one to get the 100 euros to go to the only Michelin one-star restaurant in the West of Ireland. It's called Anir.
As opposed to a far.
That's all I
remember.
It's not spelled that way.
Anir actually means west. I think we did that last week.
Yeah. And it means it's Anair. And you can find out all about it by Googling the internet anyway. But it gets a strong recommendation from us guys. That's certainly true. So keep those cards and letters coming in.
Email us.
We'll keep you posted on how well you did.
Yeah. You can email us. You can tweet me. You can post on Facebook, whatever.
There you go. Just as a way of getting through to us. And, of course, we appreciate J.P. McMahon's generosity in saying, yeah, you ought to have one of those to encourage people to come. So we're doing that. Now, where are we now? Well, we're now in the southwest as opposed to the west of Ireland. Couple of places that we visited and we're bringing you sound from are just to the east of the city of Cork, the second largest city in Ireland and quite a metropolis these days in the southwest. And then after that, we're going to go out into the countryside in a major way, and we'll introduce those guys to you when we get there. So first up, who do we have? First up, we have
Castle Martyr. Now, did we ever find out why it was called Castle Martyr? I don't remember.
It's historical. I think it's associated with a hero of wars in Europe called Strongbow.
Oh, that's right.
Was given this particular piece of land. It's really an amazing property, especially when you consider that it looks like it's 300 years old, but it only opened as a hotel 3.5 years ago.
It's splendid.
Now, and we caught up with Chef Kevin Burke, who has quite a curriculum vitae, or whatever you call it, quite a resume of cooking around the globe, which is one of the reasons that attracted us to go to this site in the first place. And we really had a lovely time in every possible respect. So here's Kevin Burke, executive chef at Castle Martyr Resort in Castle Martyr in County Cork.
Well, now, we've been moving along at a pace. I'm just wondering, where are we now? We're at Castle Martyr Resort, which is spectacular, I might say. You're in our suite. Isn't it wonderful?
It's fantastic. It's very nice.
Do you know we have a sauna?
Would you believe I said it was actually my first time in this room in over 3.5 years?
Well, Peter said he was going to tie a bell around my neck so he could find me. Anyhow, we're talking to Chef Kevin Burke, who you're born in Bandon in West Cork, so you're really pretty native here?
I suppose I am fairly local. Bandon is only 30 miles west, and I suppose when I started cooking at 16, I did a little bit around Cork City and stuff, and then I went up to Clare to quite a famous castle called Dromoland Castle. Got my basics there, we'd say, all my fundamentals in classic cooking, and then went to London. And when I came back, I always presumed that I'd end up in Dublin or somewhere up that side of the country. But just as it happened, the job became available here, and it suited quite well, you know, because I just always presumed that I wouldn't come home again.
Yeah, so you have all your family here and everything?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So it's only done, you can drive it in 45 minutes, so it's...
But you probably picked up a great deal of information and skills in London, because it's such a hotbed of cookery, huh?
Well, absolutely. You know, I suppose I initially went there for a year. That was the plan.
Yeah.
And I worked in a restaurant over there for a year, and the year went very quickly. And I said, you know, I'll try another restaurant. And then I ended up staying five years. And
the restaurant was that we were 5 years at Foliage.
I was 4 years at Foliage. And I suppose the reason I picked Foliage was because Chris Dane is the head chef there, who is a phenomenal cook. He was young, he had a very good name in London, and the restaurant was in a hotel.
It was a beautiful restaurant. I saw pictures of it, and I never got there. It was then gone.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I suppose it was open for, I think, 8 years, and it had a star and everything, and it was busy. But I think the hotel, for the size of the space and stuff, maybe they could have utilised it better, and they decided to bring in Heston Blumenthal.
Right, well, you can't lose on Heston
Blumenthal. Absolutely, you know. And I was over there a couple of months back, and I called in. I hadn't seen the lads in a while, and they've done a phenomenal job, even the restaurant, the
Isn't
kitchen.
Isn't that gorgeous?
It's phenomenal.
Well, let's jump back to Castle Martyr. You're in charge of not just the fine dining restaurant, which is called Bell Tower Restaurant.
The Bell Tower.
And but you're in charge of all kinds of other things, like the club with the golf course. And all.
You know, we have a clubhouse on the resort. We've banqueting, room service.
I've loved my breakfast, by the way.
Oh, right, fantastic!
I just asked if I could have my egg white only omelet, if they could take away the cheddar and add goat cheese, and they did this morning.
I would take great interest in breakfast, because I think in some cases people here in business or a guest check in late, it might be the only meal they eat in the hotel.
Yes.
Like, not everyone will have dinner, or not everyone will have food in the bar. So I would take quite a lot of interest in breakfast, that it's guaranteed someone will always eat breakfast here. So we try and do something special. You know, we've sourced yogurts from a farm down the road. We get our smoked fish from a smokehouse, which is probably 2 miles over the road towards Ballycotton, and all that kind of, you know, we use our own cured meats and stuff. So I take a special interest in breakfast as well, though. You know, some people don't particularly like doing breakfast, but it's just one of those things you have to do, and I do take an interest, because as you said, some people, you have to have breakfast if you stay in a hotel.
The manoir, that was the first thing he redid on the menu when he revamped his menu, was breakfast.
Yeah.
It is a gorgeous spread. It's amazing. You supervise, like, how many people in the kitchen?
Well, I suppose at the moment, because we're into the winter, which will be the quietest season, there's about 11 on the roster at the moment, and the summer, the peak time, to be up around 16 or 17 chefs.
You do a lot of special events.
Oh, we would do.
If anybody wants to have a wedding, I would highly recommend this place. This would be, I bet you that they do over the top on weddings.
The property is so fantastic. I think the food has to lift up to an expectation as well. It has to be the whole package and stuff. And we do have a solid wedding trade. We're only open 3.5 years, and we're trying to make, I suppose, a name for ourselves in what we do, and I think we're succeeding in that. We're making a name, we say, for weddings, for the restaurant, and generally for being a very good, solid hotel.
And you have, we did wander through your herb garden. Do you do other gardening on site?
Actually, we have started only probably 2 months ago. We are doing over by the old castle. We're doing quite a large garden there, and the plan is in a year's time to use 8% of veg we grow on site.
That's wonderful. I envy your rosemary's everywhere.
there's too much of it, to be honest.
They're whole trees.
Yeah. But, that, you know, I suppose every year we try and set goals for ourselves, and then the veg is next year's goal. That, like, if we can get down to 8% of our veg we buy into home growth, I think it'd be a fantastic achievement. Maybe the year after, it could be up as far as 12%. We're building polytunnels at the moment for peppers and soft herbs and stuff like that. But, you know, I suppose the management here, they're very, if you come to them with an idea, they're very pro, they're looking long term as opposed to short term. We've always have stuff on the go for the next project.
Okay, so we know you're interested in quality ingredients, and you're seasonal and interact with local producers. What else distinguishes your style and philosophy of food?
Just a hard one. I suppose people are asking me what my style of food is for the last 10 years, and I still can't answer. The way I cook is, I like to take ingredients, treat them as best I can. I don't believe in over-fussing food. I think I have maybe 6 or 7 components on the plate. Let each one of them speak as their own character. And I think it all boils down to the produce you use. I think what I like is when people come here, that they, when they leave, and they say, like, the food was cooked well and it tasted well. And I think that's what my philosophy would be, would say.
It's certainly been that to us. We had, when we were here, we ordered unorthodoxly. We did 4 apples.
All right, okay.
So we did the sweetbreads with, we call these JAs because we're loaded with them in our garden, Jerusalem artichokes.
Right, okay.
And that Parmesan gnocchi and whole grain mustard. Then we had this tuna, was wonderful, the black pepper seared tuna with red pepper puree, that wonderful, perfectly cooked quail egg, and slow-cooked onion. And then we had the risotto of smoked haddock, which was, that was really unusual. What gave you an idea for that?
About 3 weeks ago, I've a buddy of mine work in the kitchen, he's English, we were just speaking about doing breakfast in England, and he was on about, you know, kedgeree.
Yes, I know what it is.
So then I was kind of thinking, we were saying, you know, it's a very nice dish, but you wouldn't see it on that often in Ireland. So then I was kind of thinking kedgeree, so that was where I came up with the dish for the a la carte.
Uh-huh. Oh, very good. And then, of course, this is the right season for this. We have the scallops, and they are in season now, are they not?
Yeah.
And you probably get them at where? At,
we get them from a port called Castonbere to be maybe 90 miles west, quite a large fishing port down there. So I source the scallops from down there. I suppose, like, with a dish like the scallop, there's maybe four garnishes on the plate and just have three perfectly cooked scallops seasoned well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And then we'd had so much tea, Daddy, how we shared the venison.
Venison.
And the venison, is this wild or farmed?
The venison comes, the hotel I trained in years ago, Drumoulin Castle, they would have a couple of 100 acres land, and they have gamekeepers, and they have venison. Well, I suppose technically they're farmed because they're not allowed to leave the resort, uh-huh. but they live wild, and there's maybe 600 acres of land. So I'm getting the venison.
Well, this
from
man
them.
Would have been really happy the way he was dressed up.
Did him justice.
Yeah, with roast parsnip, cream cabbage, and bacon, and the roast chestnuts. I hear chestnuts are a big comeback. Is that true?
They are, well, I suppose, as well. You know, when we're coming into the Christmas season, that's, you know, I have a couple of chestnuts in the resorts.
Walking fine.
You know, I wouldn't use a chestnut, we say, during the summer, stuff like that, but it's just that, I suppose, with the time of the year, start using the produce that's available.
Now, you must have, were you here when Bill Clinton came?
I was.
Yeah, did you meet him?
I didn't meet him.
Oh, that's too bad, because he's totally charismatic.
I went out to the reception when he was coming in, and he came in, and there was actually a wedding on her that day, and the bride was American.
Oh, really? So how funny.
That absolutely made her day. So
imagine it did. She must have thrilled.
Yeah, there's actually a picture down at reception.
I saw the picture.
Of him with the wedding cup. He came in, spoke to the guests, and apparently what the staff said, he's an absolute gentleman.
Yeah.
Like everybody speaks highly of Bill Clinton.
You can't tell us what he ate, huh?
He's actually a vegan.
I knew he was vegetarian, so he's a vegan too.
Yeah.
This is, by the way, not totally recent, but more recent than his presidency. The development, it kind of came about after his heart attack.
Yeah, because I had every supplier ringing me, you know, the guy goes, get my beef off, saying, has he eaten my beef? The fish guy was asking, did he have fish?
No.
And I didn't actually know he was a vegan until we found out a week beforehand and stuff, but basically a lot of fruit, nuts.
That's what he ate?
Yeah.
Somehow I think it's a waste when you have such a great kitchen.
I suppose, do you know, like, he looks well for his age, there's probably a reason.
You think?
With his diet.
Well,
his
daughter is a vegan. That's why. Chelsea.
Is it?
Yeah. She even had a vegan wedding cake at her wedding.
That's a first, no, I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
I was actually watching a thing last night, and you might be looking for, is she called after the Chelsea Hotel in New York?
No, I don't think so.
No, I was watching last night about super hotels in
New
York.
I don't know what she's named after.
And they said that I'd never heard it.
Well, anyhow.
But I suppose as well, you know, for the resort to get such an influential person of the world to stay here, it was in every paper, it was on the news and everything. The Irish people would have a very, very soft spot for Bill Clinton.
Well, everybody does, just about.
I know, you
perfectly
know,
honest.
And you know, like what he did in Ireland years ago and stuff. And it was an absolute honor to have him here, to be honest.
If he was running today, there'd be no question.
Oh, absolutely.
As to who would win. Unfortunately, somebody decided that Democrats had candidates who were far too popular, so they had to stop them from running for more than two terms.
Anyhow, is there one last word you'd like to say? I mean, my word is, I wouldn't miss this opportunity for anything. Everyone should come. And what would your last word be about this place and your kitchen and your food?
Well, I suppose that's a good compliment, because you're obviously very well traveled and have eaten in a lot of fantastic restaurants and stuff. But I suppose if people were to make the journey, I suppose what makes Castle Martyrs special is you come in to check in and you could stay here for 3 or 4 days and not even leave the grounds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there is absolutely everything here. And I suppose that is, like, the ground, that is what makes it special. You know, whether it be the quality of the rooms, the food,
the spa,
the guest service, the spa. You know, I would like to think that we are doing something right here. And in a year's time, we'll have evolved again in another year. And that's basically our motto. Just keep evolving and don't sit on your laurels.
It's amazing. It looks like it's been here forever.
Yeah, well, I suppose.
And yet, come and how much it's going to improve.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we say, I suppose, if I look at where it was 3.5 years and where it is now, and then if I look at another 3.5 years, you know, I suppose this part of the building, this building was here, it was a school for many years. Yes. You know, I suppose the people who built it had a vision of what they wanted it to be, and I'd like to think they succeeded.
I do too. Well, thanks for everything, for the food, the oration of Irish cuisine.
That's no problem.
Yeah, and talking to us.
That's no problem, and hopefully we'll get the chance to meet you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with our second find in the tiny little village of Castle Martyr right after the break, so don't go away.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and we're about to address one of the most fun evenings that we had.
That we've had in a long time.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun. And the place is called Pat Short's. And Pat Short himself is a pretty well-known comedian. And
in Ireland. I guess he's a movie star. And also,
he's on television.
Also something a musician, but more of a musician.
Mike Hanrahan,
yeah, who became a chef only 5 years ago.
Yeah, now he's a guitarist, a songwriter, and a trained chef. Now, what about a combination? And he twinkles from top to bottom. He's so wonderful.
And it's the second great gourmet find.
Yeah, don't miss the chowder.
In the little village of Castlemartre.
Now, we are having a wonderful time. What else is new, I guess? Partially, it's because we're in an iconic pub, Pat Short's Kitchen, as it's called. And also partly because we're talking to the most charming chef, Mike Hanrahan, who is a musician as well as Pat Short is a musician. And so we have all these things going on in a blazing fire and a pub atmosphere and great food. Oh, Mike, we're having such a good time. Thanks for talking to us.
Delighted to talk to you. What a beautiful introduction.
Ah, well, we are having such a good time. For those who don't know, Pat Short, give us a brief idea of who Pat Short is.
Pat is a comedian by trade and an actor, and also happens to be a wonderful musician, a great saxophonist, and a great friend of mine for many, many years, because I myself was in the music business for 30 years before
30 years on the road.
30 years on the road, up and down the world.
And you were a guitarist?
Guitarist and a songwriter and a singer.
Where are we? We should say that too.
We're in East Cork in a beautiful village called Castlemartre, and there's a beautiful river just beside us, the Kilcher River.
And it's a classic pub environment.
Yeah, it's an old pub. This pub has been in the village for a long, long time, maybe 150 years or something. And Pat took over the pub about 6 years ago and hasn't done a whole lot with the pub because he wanted to keep the atmosphere of the pub itself. We get some memorabilia of Pat's career as a comedian and an actor is around the walls, but then lots of old photographs and the old adverts for various things.
I love
things.
The old adverts.
I love them, yeah.
Players, yeah. Please. You know? Yeah.
I'm just looking at one there for Gallagher's Irish Snuff.
No, it is an Irish pub, and I think we should emphasize that. The attitude's Irish, the food is Irish, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I was a late convert to cooking food for a profession, but I trained and studied in Ballymaloe Cookery School.
Yeah, I just wanted, not only was it my question is why would Pat want to open a pub, because he's so busy anyhow, but why at that point in your career, after a 30-year music career, did you decide to go to cookery school?
I'll deal with Pat first because that's easier.
Okay.
Pat just always wanted to have his own bar and wanted to run an Irish pub. So he saw this place. He'd been in and out of here in his travels up and down the country touring, and he liked the pub and he liked the area. So he bought the pub back about 5 or 6 years ago. And from my point of view, I just had a rush of blood to my head, as my wife tells me. And I was in the career. I was working with an incredible storyteller and singer called Ronnie Drew, and I worked with him for 10 years. And he got very ill, and he subsequently died. But during his illness, I knew he wasn't going to last much longer in the music business, so I decided to make the leap then. I've always loved food and always loved cooking, but I needed to learn. I wanted to learn and see if I wanted to make a career of it and if I wanted to.
I said, you always were in love with food.
I always loved food. I loved the idea of food, natural food, and I was a vegetarian when I was younger, so I suppose that's where I learned my love of where I wanted my food to be.
And then you picked Ballymaloe, which is probably the single most influential, I think, cause for modern Irish cuisine.
I absolutely agree with you. And it goes back from Myrtle to Dorina Allen's mother-in-law, Myrtle, who started the whole movement. And it has spread like a beautiful wave around Ireland. And people are tuning into their food. The students still come, lots of students, and when they leave, even if they don't continue on as a career, they leave with a great knowledge of food and a great understanding. And Duina has another side to her, which I have great respect for, which is her food politics. When she speaks about politics of food, you just got to stand up and listen. And for me, and during the course, that's what really got me, was here was somebody speaking about issues in food and passionate about it, and that really, I got hooked on that, as well as the cooking and her style of cooking. I just think it's simple cooking, using proper produce, local produce, and cooking with just a little bit of love for what you're doing. And I think that's what I'd like to do here.
I'm going to digress just briefly here before we get back to the actual pub. Is you have some very strong ideas about some very strong ideas that she has about food issues, food safety, local, seasonal. Tell us what some of the issues were that you got caught up in, like GMOs and so forth.
Well, the GM, the cookery school is GM-free zone completely, the entire farm. And well, I've had a problem with GM foods anyway. As a consumer, not as somebody who cooks it, even before that, as a consumer, I'm not sure if I ever liked the idea of a food being produced that, in my view, wasn't food at all. It's coming from some other area. And even right now, at the moment, it's crazy. The Irish government have allowed testing of GM potatoes.
Yeah, you got upset about that one, right?
I just find it incredible. In Ireland, the potato in Ireland are go hand in hand.
Right.
We're a potato culture, and it's such part of our history as well, and some dark parts of our history, and are very positive because it's fed a lot of people. And I grew up in a potato family, you know, we ate lots of potatoes and different ways of cooking it. And we have natural, green, fertile land here. And the government now are testing GM. And they're telling us that it's just testing for 4 or 5 years. But you and I know if once the GM starts...
Yes, I mean, in the States, they do not have to tell you if there's anything GMO included in your food.
I find that incredible.
I do too.
You know, but I'm sure here, if you were started going into the ins and outs of it, mind you, the food industry here, I think the food industry is still very young and vibrant. So a lot of people are tuned into food issues like the GM. Like raw milk is another big issue here. Somebody in the government have a problem with people using raw milk, and they're trying to ban it from different areas, which... I mean, I've used raw milk in cheese making.
Yeah, I mean, extensive cheese.
Yeah, I was reared drinking raw milk, and we're still around. My mother's still a hearty 84 years of age. She was reared in raw milk. So there's all those issues. Now, thankfully, there's a lot of people in the food industry who are vociferous, and they stand up and be counted. And that's nice. It's good to have that here.
Let's hope it gets stronger.
Yeah.
Back to when you came in, you said to this pub, one of the first things you did was straighten out the playlist. Talk to us about that, because obviously with your background and with past background, there's going to be a big music component in here. And tell us about this jazz festival as well.
Well, traditionally there's a jazz festival at October Bank Holiday Weekend in Cork City. And they get all the publicity and all the kudos for it. So we decided this year that we were going to have an East Cork Jazz Festival in conjunction, almost like a fringe festival. So it was our first time trying it. It was a real success for the first time out. And it was so nice to hear really good jazz music played in the bar. We're used to having ballads or folk or pop or traditional Irish music here, a lot of traditional Irish music. But hearing on the Sunday night, we had a band playing French style club jazz music, and it was wonderful. So we're going to do it again next year, and we also have a folk festival on the August Bank Holiday Weekend every year, and that's been going for 4 years now. That's extremely successful, and we put a marquee out the back and sell tickets for the gigs, and we've had a few great years there.
Give us some potential dates that people can actually
Bank Holiday Weekend it. In August is the first weekend in August. And that always happens here that weekend.
And it'll be posted, the specific date where?
It'll be posted on the websites, and we get a lot of publicity from local press, and we use the internet quite a lot, so it'll be out there.
Any starter website people to check on?
Just Pat Short's Bar.
With two T's?
Yeah, with two T's, yes, very good. Two T's. S-H-O-R-T-T-S.
Now back to this menu. I honestly did not realize that you could bring out so much food in such a short period of time. Just go over a few of the items we had, starting with your absolutely fabulous chowder.
Well, I'm blessed here as a cook that all our produce is local. We have a village greengrocer across the street, and all the local farmers feed their vegetables in there. They distribute to the entire area in East Cork. My butcher is a butcher. He lives 200 yards up the street, and he butchers his own meat. My fisherman is from Ballycotton. He has his own boat. So we get really natural products. So I can't screw it up. I mean, the natural products are there. So I've used my skills that I've learned from Drina, and my chowder is a take on Drina's recipe. I add a couple of extra little things into it. I don't like using smoked fish in my chowders. So instead I add a little pinch of smoked paprika to get a little bit of a smoke effort into it. And I dance around with traditional menus like that and see where I go. But the chowder I'm very proud of.
Now you put some salmon in the chowder too, which is a little bit unusual.
But it's an organic salmon. It's from an organic salmon farm.
Is it local?
Yeah, it's from Cork.
It's from Cork?
Yeah.
Okay. And the smoked salmon was also wonderful. Is that the same producer?
The smoked salmon is a different producer, in Shanagarry, Bill Casey. He produces.
So he's even closer than Cork. He's less than 10 miles away.
He's about 3 or 4 miles away. We had ghost cheese.
Oh, now tell us about that one. That was rather unusual.
I used to make a lot of ghost cheese when I was in working with Darina. I just got hooked on cheese making there. And I since discovered actually that my grandmother majored in a college back in the 30s, and her main subject was cheese making.
Really?
And I never knew that until a couple of years ago.
That's very unusual.
So that must be where I got the love of it from. She made her own butters and all when we were growing up. And the ghost cheese we use is from Artella, which is Cork as well, and it's a soft ghost cheese. And I wanted it on the starters. There was a couple of recipes I knew with roast peppers, and I knew pear goes really well with it. And then somewhere along the line, somebody said the black pudding is not a bad...
It was very unusual, but it worked.
I think it works, yeah. I'm glad you think that. Because
I wasn't sure.
it's a very popular dish here as a result. So we tried all different things, and we eventually ended up with the... I think the mixture of the ghost cheese, the black pudding, and pear, and the pepper, it's just all these little bits of everything. And we finish it with Ballymaloe relish on the side for people to dip into. So it works for us, and it works for our clients, and they love it.
And we had burgers, and we had stew with mash. And what else did we have? Oh, we love the place.
The place, yeah.
It was beautiful.
And it's fresh. Our fish arrives in, I often said to the customers that the fish is still winking at us when it arrives in. And
you gently handle it.
It has to be. And I know you can do so much with fish and put loads of sauces and everything on it. And sometimes I'll do that with monkfish or with the stronger fishes. I'll experiment with different sauces. But for the flatfish, I just like it on the pan. And a little bit of, we make our own herb and pepper butter. We make all our own butters here. We get obviously the regular butter, but we add in some flavors.
What happens when you get somebody with really good palate and culinary training, local products, and a wonderfully fun pub environment? I mean, you've done wonders.
Thank you very much.
Website is
Pat Shorts Bar, www.patshortsbar.com.
Pat
Shorts Bar.
And it's .com, not .ie.
I think it's .com, yeah.
I think it's .com. You want to check for sure?
I'm going to check that.
Well, we've certainly had a wonderful time and enjoyed. And you have all wonderful stories to share as well, which is great.
Oh, and of course, we forgot about the beer.
Oh.
After
I
all,
was
this
just
going to
mention
this
that.
This is a pub. Miss Anne, of course, had to drink red wine.
Well, but Miss Anne is ordinary, but she had some beer at the end.
We have to have this dark beer from Cork. Where else? Since we're close to Cork, we have Beamish. If we were in Dublin, of course, we'd have to have Guinness.
Yes.
But there's a craft beer movement going on as well.
See, it's massive in Ireland. And it's such a... they're getting support now from Bord Bia. Bord Bia, the government body, are supporting craft beer. And even last week, we had a craft beer and cheese tasting. And it happens once a year in Ireland. This is the second year of it, where all over the country, Bord Bia support pubs and restaurants to host a night of craft beer and cheese. So we take local cheeses, and we use beer. The 8 degrees was the one you liked, Peter.
Yes, I liked it a lot.
From Mitchelstown, and then we use another craft beer from Dungarvan, which is over on the west near Waterford. They're very successful as well. And then we use a cider from Longville House, which is Cork as well. And we mix that with the cheeses, and it's...
Yeah, and well, we haven't even got into the cheeses. The blue cheese was fabulous.
The blue cheese, Crozier Blue. And when I went a bit crazy last week for the beer and cheese, because I'm a fanatic for the internet. I think the amount of information up there for food, because I haven't spent years in the kitchen learning from other people. So my learning, continuous learning, is from the internet. So I'm constantly on the internet looking for things. So I discovered so much beer and cheese recipes. We had breads and chutneys and all sorts of crazy things here.
Now there's one last thing we should mention, because it's a little tricky. It would be a shame if you drove to Castlemartre expecting to eat at Pat Short's bar and you came at the wrong time of day. So you flex your hours of the kitchen just a little bit, and a little bit different than a restaurant.
Yes. We open Monday to Thursday. It's from 12 o'clock to 5 Friday. Our Friday and Saturday night, we open from 12 to 8 o'clock. And on Sunday, then, Sunday lunch is 12:30 to 5.
Now, that's just the food side of it.
That's the food.
The pub remains open for typical pub licensing hours?
Absolutely, regular hours. And we get lots of parties. Sometimes we get parties coming in, maybe wedding parties or private parties come in. We'll have food for those guys if they're required.
And this place is so easy to find, because the village of Castlemartre has two stoplights, and it's the second one heading east.
That's right.
And on the right-hand side, the red building, you can't miss the sign, parking in the back, come and enjoy. We have, and we know you will too. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
And don't go away, because we'll be right back.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
On our visit to Ireland, we ventured far to the southwest. Cork is west. County Kerry is far southwest. Fingers of land and fingers of ocean, side by side, a series of bays.
They're like
locks,
fjords,
whatever you might call them. They're a little bit like fjords, but I believe they're not actually glacial in derivation. They're actually what are called rias. They're sunken estuaries.
No, how about
rivers.
That?
So there you learn a little something every day.
Something from this geographer.
This geographer was totally fascinated by the whole region of the southwest, which is some really slow driving. Because we drove up and over, they say through, but it seemed to me like it was up and over the Mully Gap in the McGillicuddy's Reeks. The McGillicuddy's Reeks being the highest range of mountains in the whole of the country of Ireland, and far in the southwest, and all the way along this little road. I think it was the N21. Anne thought we were going the wrong way.
She kept saying, "This can't be right.
This can't be right. We're going the wrong way." She's very good at reading directions. So we made it over the mountains. We made it to the shore. We made it to the most gorgeously situated Parknassilla Resort, where we had a very restful stay and a fine dinner cooked by Chef Peter Brennan, who we talked to right here.
Well, Chef Peter Brennan, I am counting on you to help me figure out where we are here, because we've been moving around quite a bit. It's called
Parknassilla.
And why is it called? Is it because of a place nearby here?
Well, in Gaelic, it means literally... I think it means the Park of Islands. So there's a lot of islands around here, and that's the anglicized version of it.
Okay.
Parknassilla. So the correct pronunciation in English is Parknassilla.
And it is a lovely resort and spa. In fact, I'm a little annoyed that everybody else is going to the spa and I'm working. But we're going to get to have dinner here at the Pygmalion restaurant, which is your bailiwick.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about you, Peter, because you've been everywhere. You have 30 years experience, mm-hmm. and you've worked quite a range of places in the UK, in Europe. Mm-hmm. Where else have you worked?
Well, I suppose my career in a nutshell, just to precede it would be 23, I left here, did an apprenticeship here in Ireland, and then left in the time of the 80s when there was severe unemployment and ran out of here. Was away for nearly 20 years, 13 of those in the UK, places like the Savoy in London, Grosvenor House in London.
Yeah, we've stayed there a number of times. That's fun.
Yeah, there were two great places. And Turner's Restaurant, the home of celebrity chef at the time. In fact, Brian is still on TV at the moment, Brian Turner. I was his head chef, I should say, for 4 years. And I was also in Switzerland for 4 years. And then finally, I was on the pretty island of Madeira, 700 miles off the North African coast and 700 miles from Portugal.
And is the cuisine there Portuguese?
Yeah, I mean, they would probably say it's Madeiran, but it certainly has Portuguese influence. There's a lot of things
Portuguese
on it.
Portuguese are everywhere. I mean,
yeah. And a lovely, very simple food. A lot of the dishes were very peasant dishes, so they did things like pastiche nata is a little... one of the things I really remember about the property, about Reed's where I worked, Reed's being famous for is afternoon tea. And everybody would come for afternoon tea, including the liners that would check into Funchal. You'd have 6-7 liners coming in, could dock straight in the harbour and come in, and they'd have this little amazing little cake. And it's actually very, very difficult to make. I have not managed to make it properly here yet. And it's kind of a phyllo based, and it's an egg custard as well.
They're like the ones they make in Belém in Lisbon, right?
Could be, I don't know.
Yeah, they're named after this particular suburb of Lisbon called Belém, which has a famous tower, but it's also famous for these little...
Well, now, coming back home, mm-hmm. so to speak, mm-hmm. and to this particular property, number of different changes for you. I'm sure that the ingredients that you have access to are different, and you're ingredient-driven, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
The size, the scale of this is not nearly as large as your...
No.
So you can focus more.
I can focus more on the cooking, I suppose, and that's what I've done. I suppose, you know, to be honest with you, prior to Park Nacilla, 2009, I'd taken a couple of years out. The facility was there. I took some time out, did some consulting. I also do some mentoring for Oxford Books in the UK, where we look after final year hospitality students.
You work for Cystic Oxford. Fibrosis?
I've done some charity work for cystic fibrosis because my brother-in-law had cystic fibrosis and died about 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, it's a very debilitating illness.
Yeah, we contribute to...
Yeah. A great cause, and it's now profile now. So
in fact, it's funny. Cystic Fibrosis is having their big fundraiser of the year tonight,
and we can't go.
Can't go. But what a shame! As we're in Ireland, and Peter's cooking for
you. You're down in sunny Kerry,
and I'm sure the food will be a whole lot better. But they'll be silent auctioning off about $1,500 in cookbooks that we contributed to their event. So I'm sure they'll all be having a fine old time, just as we will be.
Now, what is this particular restaurant, Pygmalion, known for? You're cooking, obviously, but can you give us just some idea, aside from your concern with quality ingredients and seasonality, I've heard you say, too.
Yeah.
What other heuristics are there of your cooking that we can expect tonight at dinner?
Well, obviously, as I said, I try and cook seasonally as much as possible. I stick to it rigidly, in so much as I even refuse to do things that are not in season. And I'll explain to the customer that that's just the way it is. And they'll say that they got it elsewhere. And I say, well, that's elsewhere.
Go there.
This is what we do. I say go there under my breath. I don't, obviously. And I suppose the unique thing about the Pygmalion is that... It will probably be the numbers we do too. I'm set to do 200 tonight.
Yeah, I saw you. There's some sort of a gathering of a clan.
Yeah, there's a clan gathering of 60 people. So I'll feed them in the back of the restaurant here beside us tonight. And then I'll do another 120 a la carte diners tonight. So I have got to find a balance between providing quality food, sort of inverted commas fine dining, but at the same time, I have to be able to do numbers. We have to do covers here. And our covers, like I would do in any night during the summer, especially July and August, I could have 150 booked in the space of an hour and a half.
Now, where do all these people come from, Peter?
Well, 90% of them.
Especially tonight, because you're actually going to start closing the property from Sunday night until Thursday night. Starting tomorrow, is it just because tonight, because everybody's going to miss you for a while?
No, we're just busy. We've had a fantastic season, and I think it's my fourth year here, and year on year business has improved. I think the food has a little part to play in that. I think we now have a little bit of a reputation for food here, which this place never really had.
Well, what will you do personally when the restaurant
take
closes?
Some time out, go to sleep. Go to sleep for a while, genuinely, because the season is quite heavy. And I'm not getting any younger either. And I need my time out too. It's a chance to see my family as well. So, yeah, my home is Kilkenny.
Oh, is it?
So I'll go up there tomorrow.
We just come through there?
Have you?
Did we?
We're actually stopping in Kilkenny on our way back towards Dublin.
All right.
At the end of our stay in Ireland. And the reason that we're doing that, Peter, I think you might be interested, is because we were there just briefly. We were on a sort of a drive-through when we were staying in Dublin the last time we were here, and we were on our way to Ballymaloe to interview Dorina Allen, who I'm sure you know, down there. And we stopped in Kilkenny just to have a place to stop and look around. And it was so charming.
That's a good spot. It's a lovely spot.
We said, you know, we just have to come back to this town. Because it's worth more of our time. It was really so interesting. So we're going to do that. In fact, we'll be there Friday night.
Oh, you'll still be here.
You'll be back, right? Mm. You'll be back because they're
open again.
So, and that's something to make a note of, listeners, because we found that we had to do some schedule adjustment in order to be able to visit this property. Because any time between the beginning of November and the beginning of the Christmas season, be careful to make sure, planning in advance, that you know that the resort is going to be open, or whether or not it's going to be closed, then you should plan to come on a different day.
Now, what do you like particularly on tonight's menu? I don't see oysters on here, Peter.
Well, am I going to get given out because there's no oysters on it?
Why are there no oysters?
Because I suppose if I'm going to do 200 covers, and for me, opening oysters a la minute would be...
You don't have somebody to do
it? Well, no, it's not... I would have to have somebody, one person, standing there all night shucking oysters. And it's not an easy job. Mm-hmm. If we were going to do 40 covers and sell 10 portions of oysters, no problem. Absolutely no problem. But I suppose... As regards the menu,
we're only asking you to do 2 covers of oysters. we don't care about the 198 other people.
I'm sure I can persuade you to have anything else that's on the menu.
So tell me what kinds of things you really most like cooking with.
Fish.
Fish, all right.
End of story, fish.
Okay.
Because I think, as I said before we started our conversation now, the fish is so fresh. It's pristine when it comes in here. Probably... As I said, it's probably the best fish I've ever got.
Yeah.
And never any issues with it being substandard or not right. And it's always fresh. I don't buy frozen. I will steer away from farm fish. The only farm fish I do buy, and I'll put my hands up and say, is I buy sea bass, and I buy that for breakfast.
Oh.
Only for breakfast. People have sea bass for breakfast.
Just
fresh sea bass.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what people have. Whereas in the evening, we vary. We go monkfish, halibut, turbot, John Dory, scallops, pretty much indigenous species to the area. I will not use breams and stuff. Local crab meat, the Kerry crab meat from Castletown Bear.
Lunch.
Yeah, it's great crab meat. Again, that's coming towards the end of the season. Scallops are great now.
Yeah.
Because there's the season for scallops. Scallops are fab. Turbot is particularly great now.
Of course, you picked one of the hardest things to work with, fish.
What?
That's
fish.
Very rude.
It's just getting the cooking right.
The
cooking right. And the thing about inside is that despite the fact that I'll do 200 tonight, so I'll do 120 a la carte on top of a group, everything gets cooked as I call it away. So I have a large teppanyaki grill inside.
Oh, do you?
And every order, when I call your table away, say you two guys have had your starters, and I call away a fish and a meat, the chefs inside cook and garnish to order. So nothing, it's all done last minute. So there's no sealing off, and so when you get a piece of turbot or a piece of monk or a piece of John Doerr, any fish out of that kitchen especially, it's right. It has to be right. And it goes from the grill to me, and I plate up everything. And then the garnish works with them, and I get everything last minute.
You've been to so many different places. Mm. What influences have rubbed off onto you?
Gosh, that's a hard one.
In the German section of Switzerland.
That's
a totally different...
The Schweiz, yeah. I was, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
We were just in Berlin, and I mean, I was getting really exhausted with these...
It was called Death by Schnitzel.
Schnitzels. I mean, I had enough schnitzel to last me all life.
Yeah, but we put it on the menu here, and it sells.
Yeah, well,
I put it occasionally. I suppose I'm a French cook.
Okay.
If anybody say to me, I'm classically French trained. So I suppose I still believe after all these years that is the fun, that's your ground zero. You have to know
you
that.
Have all that technique.
And if you do that, then the derivatives from using basic French cooking principles can be whatever.
I see you worked with Albert Roux.
We did, yeah. I did a cooking promotion with Albert.
Saw him interviewed on.
Great guy.
On what television program was it?
He was on some kind of Irish television program, I think.
Yeah.
And why in particular he was on, I don't know. We came in.
Well, it's very simple because he's the father of modern cooking, certainly at this side of the water, both in England and Ireland. And every decent chef, especially in the UK, can trace back some way to either having worked for somebody who's worked for him. And that's why I've done two promotions with him for 2 weeks, and I loved having him. He was a real father figure, and he's a revered character.
He's done great things.
Fantastic
with his
guy.
Son.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's a great, and he, but he's also a character, and we cooked really, really simple food the 2 weeks he did it, but it was done properly. It was just done to perfection. I remember a quick story. He would arrive on, he would travel over the cheapest way. So himself and his consultant chef would come in a van, drive from England, and they'd have the food in the van with them.
Oh,
so,
no.
Well, you know, they would bring certain products with them. So any dried products. And I remember he arrived at 11 o'clock one night, and we were just about finished in the kitchen. We were saying, well, I said, the chef's coming, so we need to say hello to him, stay on, say hi. So we said hi and hello, and he went, so you're going home now? And I said, yeah, well, we've been here all day, chef.
How long ago is this?
This is about 3 years ago.
He's pushing 80, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he's an old, but you know, he's still well up to it. And he said, no, he said, there's two bags of beans here that need to be peeled. Shelled. I said, but chef, the lads have been on since. He said, I don't care. And we all sat down. And he started telling stories, and it was lovely.
Yeah, he looked like a real storyteller.
Yeah, teller. Great character.
Now, another name you mentioned was Paul Heathcote. And we ran across, not him, we actually met his father. One of his downmarket restaurants in Manchester a few years ago. And his father was expressing the opinion that Paul had expressed, that no one could make funny with fine dining. Fine dining was finished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you don't agree.
Well, I don't. I think there's still a place for it. It might have watered down a bit. It might have dissipated. I think there's a little bit more food for the masses, in inverted commas. But having said that, I mean, there still are a lot of restaurants that would focus on fine dining per se. I mean, what's fine dining? I mean, I don't know. But
I don't know, but I tend to equate it with these napkins that are so stiffly starched they keep falling off your lap during dinner.
Now, that's one take on it, yeah.
Now, here's an interesting question for you. 200 people tonight.
Mm-hmm.
150 people commonly, you said, during the season. Mm-hmm. Where do all these people come from?
Like I said, most of them would probably come from, 90% are Irish anyway, okay. Over 90% are Irish. And in Irish, demographically, they're coming from Dublin, Cork, Limerick. I suppose this year we did 2 or 3% UK, not too many Americans, but yeah. It's indigenous business, which is great for here. But because here would be a very known property in Ireland, it'd be a property that's been known for years, an iconic sort of property.
Mm. Well, I mean, I'd like to reach out to fellow Americans to say that if you're not coming here, you're really missing out. Because it was a first time last year, and it was totally eye-opening, about that, particularly the pristine seafood. I couldn't believe it.
Good.
The best lobster I ever had in my life.
And you won't find a more delightful place to sit and eat. Now, tonight we're probably going to be eating inside, mm-hmm. not just because
but
it's
the
cold.
But also,
the views are stunning.
But also because it's raining.
Stunning.
But you sit on the terrace?
We do. We do during the day. Okay. But I mean, at nighttime, people, the view in there, especially in the bay, they will fight each other for a table in the bay. In fact, we don't take reservations for the bay.
Oh, no.
No, we don't take reservations for the bay window. And even when it's pitch dark outside, people will say, come in at 8 o'clock and say, no, we'll wait. We'll wait till the table becomes available. And at 9 o'clock, they'll walk in. It's pitch dark and they can't see. There's no view to see, but they still will want
Why?
To sit in the bay. I don't know. It's a tradition here in Park Nacilla. People have always wanted to sit in the bay. And you know what? It's funny, but some of the peripheral tables, if you're especially a couple and you want to sit down and have a chat or you want a nice quiet, you will not get it in the bay because it's such a cacophony of sound, because of the way it's designed. But look, even you were saying earlier about, oh, Ireland is raining again, but if you even look out now, I mean, the views, I never get tired of looking at the views here.
They're gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
I would have always said, if you guys had asked me prior to me coming here, like, where should you go for, where's the most prettiest place? I suppose West Cork is stunning. I've always thought that. And Galway, parts of Galway, like, yeah, Spittle and that. But having said that, I go around and do a lot of fishing, and I, looking out at views when you're sitting on a beach or you're sitting on a headland, I don't think I've seen nicer. And we do get some nice days. I know it's raining, and we'd call this a soft day anyway. This is not. There's a little splatter of rain. It's a bit cold outside, but it's a soft day.
Well, there's a place in the U.S. called the Greenbrier, which is a grand old tradition, and they call it liquid sunshine.
So you have that here. I was telling Anne as we drove over the gap in the McGillicuddy's Reeks today.
McGillicuddy Reeks, yeah.
I said I've only been trying to get here for about 57 years. Mm. And finally got here, because I was actually supposed to come here years ago with my senior scout troop, and our trip was cancelled. Mm. So I never got to see this wonderful country until now, and it's thrilling. I mean, it's spine-tinglingly beautiful.
What's the best season to come?
Best time to come, honestly, given the last 4 or 5 years, September.
Okay.
We had lovely weather in September.
That's where we were last.
Like,
time
it was lovely.
September, yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah. You know, it was very pleasant. It wasn't raining, and it would be 15, 16, 20 degrees outside. September was this year and last year and the previous year has been the best. And the time when you would expect it and everybody hopes for it to be nice, like August.
August
has been terrible.
August is a wet month.
Wet month.
Well, it's a wet.
But I think it's climatically driven. You know, everything's changed. Yeah. Everything has changed, you
I
know?
So. Peter, I can't wait. I know you have a lot of work ahead of you, so we'll let you get back in the kitchen and expect that you'll give us some help and figure out what we're going to eat tonight, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it was nice talking to you.
Yeah, it's nice talking to you, and I really look forward to seeing what's going on in your kitchen and tasting it.
I got to close this. Anne said, why is this chef called Peter? And why is the doorman called Peter? I said, because it's a really good name. I said, if you can't be called Jesus,
you might as well be called Peter.
Second best name.
Because he was sort of like second in charge.
He was second. He was the lieutenant.
He'd been in charge for a pretty long time. So I think it's a pretty fine name. And I wish I had grandsons who had the same name. Nobody seems to agree with me that it's a great name. I bet you have a son called Peter.
I don't. I have two daughters. And if I could call them Peter, I would. But anyway. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
And enjoy your evening with us.
And we'll be back with the final segment right after this short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And finally, in today's program, just the ticket. For those of you who like to shoot.
Yeah, could I just say I did learn something.
You did learn something, yes.
Between hunting, which involves a fox and dogs and horseback riding, and shooting. And this was a shooting lodge. So if you want to go out and shoot.
And our host, George Gossip, is an expert not only in how to shoot, but also in how to fix shooting.
Dress and butcher. And butchering classes.
And all of the above. But amazingly, and quite deliciously, I might add, for dinner we had fish.
Yeah.
So we had Dover sole on the bone, which was also delicious, even though it came from a little more than 50 miles away, George told us. Imagine that Ireland is bisected from east to west by the N4, the M4, the N6, and the M6. You stray not too far away from there. In a section of the country called East Galway, which will be a port of call for you on the way to West Galway, or a port of call for you on the way to the far southwest, which is how we included it in our itinerary. And you'll find a grand old house filled with grand old antiques called Ballandurry Park. And here's the owner, George Gossip.
Yes, I find that here we are in Ballinasloe. Is that correct, George?
No, we're about 7 miles west of Ballinasloe. We're in the sort of eastern plains of County Galway, between the River Shannon and Galway City. It's an area that's not well known to tourists. It's a very good area for looking at Ireland's monastic past and Celtic past. Monasteries and abbeys and friaries and all those sort of things.
Oh,
and
I
castles.
Hope you get to see some of those.
Huh? You can. There's one down in the village. You can see it without going very far at all.
And I didn't really introduce you. It's George Gossip, and you are the owner of this property, which is, we're calling this a family estate?
It's not. An estate is generally a big piece of land. This is not a big piece of land. It's a house which was good 18th century farmhouse.
Okay.
Which fell into great disrepair, and my wife and I bought it about 10 years ago, and we have been restoring it, we hope, sympathetically.
Yeah, well, you apparently had a lot to do.
Yes, we did. I'll show you the photographs later.
Yes, because I read about it, and it was a big gamble that you could actually tackle this bigger project. And it's actually called Ballanderry Park. Is that the name of the property?
Yes. Well, it was always called Ballanderry House, but while the house was in a semi-ruinous state, somebody else took that name, so we decided we didn't want to be confused with them, so we had to give it a different name.
Oh, okay.
And since it has a nice park in front of it with lovely trees, we thought that would be a good name for it.
It's funny, someone asked us when we were asking directions for where we're going next,
yes,
which Ballanderry Park was it? So it may be that the one you know about never actually came into existence.
No, the other one is called, there's a house at the top of the road called Ballanderry, as well as this house, so we didn't want to call it the same name.
Okay.
Explain what the function is. I mean, you have lived here, it's a private home.
What this is, it's a historic house which is furnished, we hope, in an appropriate way, and it's where guests can come and stay with us and enjoy being in a nice 18th century house and having good food and convivial company, but no television and no bar.
Right. So, but now, you were around all the time and you intermingle with everybody?
I come and I go. I generally do the cooking, but I don't always do the cooking.
I wanted to ask you about
I'm here 90% of the time. When I'm not here, somebody else is here in my stead.
Well, let's point out that during your real hours are actually summer hours, probably spring and summer.
Yeah, we're open all the time from beginning of April to the end of September. And then at other times, we will open for small groups.
Okay. And the small groups, they come and they're going to be able to self-cater?
Well, no. They come. Small groups will come and they will stay a weekend or two or three days. They very often come for a theme, like they might come for a hunting party or they might come for some sort of gathering of school friends, college friends, professional associates, those kind of things. And they want to get away together, take over a whole house where they can be as in their own house, but they don't have to do the work.
And how many people can the property accommodate?
Well, it can only take 8 at the moment, okay. But when we have other bits outside going, we'd be able to take up to a dozen.
Part and parcel of this whole thing is the hunting. You are a hunter.
Well, in Ireland, we don't call it hunting. We call it shooting. Hunting in Ireland is chasing foxes with hounds on horseback.
Oh, that's
I don't do that because I don't like eating fox.
Ah, explain this, because it's right exactly as it should be, that you got into cooking because you were into shooting and you liked to utilize what you caught.
Well, mostly true, but I got variously involved. I got into cooking because I was greedy, but I got into cooking game.
What do you mean you were greedy?
Greedy. I like eating a lot.
Uh-huh.
But I got into game cookery because I was shooting, I had a lot of this stuff lying around, and I wanted to see how to prepare it, and I wanted to use traditional recipes, and I wanted to treat it in a traditional way, but I also wanted to look at innovative things from elsewhere in Europe and further afield.
So you actually researched all
of this? I did a certain amount of research, yes. I got lots of game books, and I go on the internet is very good because there are all sorts of recipes now on the internet, but unfortunately, there are so many, and there are so many variations that you really can't try them all very easily.
Right, you need an app.
No, I need a commie chef.
You need now. Explain your connection also with Ballymaloe, because we were there last year and interviewed everybody and enjoyed the gardens, which were gorgeous, and food the students prepared, and we just thought it was a wonderful place.
It's a very good place. I know them because I was at school with some of the Allen children, and I've remained friendly with Timmy Allen and Eftarine, particularly for 45
years.
Yeah, and because we're close friends and we'd meet up a lot, and I go and they're very generous hosts, and they occasionally ask me to go and put on a game cooking course, and I enjoy doing that. I'm going to do one on Saturday.
Now, you tend to do the small game, though.
Yeah, no, I do venison, and I do, but we don't have wild pig in Ireland.
You don't?
We don't. I mean, I will do hare, venison, but also all sorts of different game birds.
Game birds are wonderful.
Yes, and mostly game birds, because that's mostly what people, most Irish shooting people, what you would call hunters, they mostly shoot birds. Very few of them shoot bigger animals. So the main demand is in how to deal with the small birds. And until recently, I'm afraid to say, a great many people would go out and shoot birds and throw them there when they shot them. And that's not very nice.
Now, do you process all of your catch yourself?
Well, I get help, but yes. But I mean, I'm not shooting prodigious amounts. But yes, we do deal with them all ourselves. And we also, traditionally in Ireland, we would hang a bird. You know, if you shot a pheasant, you wouldn't eat it tomorrow.
Right.
You would hang it in the feather by the neck. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Europe, they hang the bird by the feet.
They do. And in fact, we noticed that, say in Paris, you know, the birds in the market.
Yes.
Always had some feathers on them.
Well, we would hang them in the feather.
But not all feathers, they were partially plucked. But since it became a member of the EU, they're all plucked now. We figured it must be some sort of regulation. Because I loved seeing the birds.
Yes, I loved going to a market and seeing wild boar, various types of deer, lots of different types of birds all hanging up. And it's good that it's a traditional thing, it's a traditional sport. It's far better that they're wild animals and not too many are shot than that they're bred for the pot.
Uh-huh. Now, we will be having dinner here tonight, and what to expect.
Well, I can tell you what you're going to have for a main course, which is you're going to have a small sole on the bone. Do you like sole?
Sole.
You probably call it Dover sole, do you?
Yeah. Is that local?
Well, no, it's come from the sea, and we're 60 miles inland, so no,
oh,
it's not local.
So we're having sole.
Yes.
And what would the average person's experience be here? It's communal eating.
We have communal dining room. Everyone sits at the one table because the room is not big. And if you had separate tables, you'd be obliged to have pipe music. I like piped music. And if you didn't have pipe music, everyone would be whispering so as not to be overheard. And there's a huge import. This is run like a private house. So the people who come here have to get on with one another, have to talk to one another. And that's just the way of it.
And you also do breakfast.
Oh, yes.
Very traditional breakfast.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to this.
Well,
and
we
it's a pleasure. Anyhow, how about a web? How do people get reservations here? BALLINDERRY park@gmail.com. So how much in advance?
Well, it depends. In the normal course of the year, I don't need a huge amount of advance notice, but particularly people need to get in touch. And at certain times, we're very busy, such as when there's a horse fair in Ballinasloe, where we have a huge demand on, and that's booked up months in advance. I don't go to it because I don't like horses, but others do. They kick and bite and misbehave in every way.
It is a totally different experience here. It's an unusual part of the country, and it's not the usual kind of place. We're not even like a B&B. It's more like, as you said, a community setting.
It's a historic family home where you have nice things, nice old things, century family home, and we hope it's furnished authentically and that it does not have lots of reproduction furniture and modern pictures. It's got old things. They're all part of our family collection, and we like people to share them with us.
Now, there was one thing we missed, because, of course, On the Menu is all about the world of both eating and drinking, and you have a special wine connection,
well,
I understand.
I don't really, but my son is a wine merchant.
That's what I meant.
And he sells the sort of wine that I couldn't afford to buy and you couldn't afford to drink.
Oh, dear. So that's not what we're having.
But he does advise me. He's not totally right. He works in London and he sells in, you know, very fine wine on Primeur's investment.
Uh-huh. So we're not having that.
No.
But you'll take care of it. You'll make sure we have a little something to
take. I will indeed.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to dinner and experiencing the house.
Good. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for joining today's program. Don't forget to send in your application for the €100 gift certificate to an Ear restaurant in Galway City in Ireland. And he is hoping that you'll have a great time between now and next week, when we hope that you'll join us again. Same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.